Australia Remembers, tape recording 3. This tape has been recorded at the Berwick RSL Club in Langmore Lane, Berwick, on the 9th of August 1995.
My name is George Beecher. I was living in Clarendon Street, Thornbury, when the war broke out. Early in 1940, I enlisted into the AIF from the Melbourne Town Hall and spent the first few days of my army life, army training, at the Caulfield Racecourse. After a few days at the Caulfield Racecourse, I was put into a signal unit and sent to Seymour Camp. From Seymour Camp, I was sent down to the Royal Melbourne Technical School to specialise in a fitter's course, that is, a fitter armourer to service and to look after rifles, revolvers, and it also included light maintenance for motorbikes and trucks. A signal unit I was posted to eventually was the 8th Divisional Signals. We did most of our camp training in Liverpool or Bathurst. Unfortunately, we missed out on the 6th Division, and I was put into the 8th Division and eventually sailed on the Queen Mary from Sydney to Singapore. We were in Singapore and did the jungle training and were supplying personnel, signals personnel, to the infantry, artillery, divisional headquarters, and anybody else that needs communication contact, such as donars, dispatch riders, Morse code, heliograph, and any sort of signal, including runners, if they are unable to get to their destination by motorbike or truck. And we did about 12 months training before the Japanese invasion eventually took place. We were up near the Thailand-Malaysian border at Alor Star, where we had first contact with the Japanese, and we backpaddled, or retreated as the word is they use, down the peninsula, down Malaya to Kuala Lumpur, to eventually to Johor Bahru, and then on to Singapore Island. I think the war in Malaya was a hell of a shambles. At most stages we could have held the Japanese, as was proven at Muar. The Japs would, when they were up against a stronger force or a more determined force, they had a habit of retreating and coming around behind us. And so eventually we were caught in our own trap, or in a trap, but we still had the sufficient troops. They weren't being utilised to the best advantage. And eventually we finished up in Singapore, and the British hierarchy in their wisdom thought that civilians should be respected and looked after. In my book, the civilians shouldn't have been there, and they interfered with the advancement and the fighting of the campaign to such an extent that the British generals decided that they wanted to surrender. They were only in the minority, their troops, and they threatened the Australian troops. Unless they laid down their arms, the British would take up arms against the Australians, which was absolutely ridiculous because we had food, ammunition. The only thing we were short of was water, but there was rains every day there, anyhow, in Singapore, Malaysia. So that wasn't any worry. If we'd have known it, we'd have known what we know now. The Japs were out of artillery ammunition, and they were contemplating withdrawing and bypassing Singapore, but we didn't know that till afterwards. And eventually the surrender, Sobruk Pop, and the Japanese signed a surrender on the 15th of August 1942. After the surrender, we were all marched out to the Changi camp, or what was left of it. The Changi camp had been the permanent barracks for the British and Scots soldiers that were stationed there as on a permanent basis. The Japanese then formed work parties, some to go and clean up the damage in Singapore, some to work on shipyards, some to work on railways. They eventually decided they'd put a railway through from linking Burma with Malaysia, and they sent various work parts up to the well-known Burma railway line, which was a shocking place to be. Shortage of food, jungle conditions, typhoid, malaria, dengue, ulcers, you name it, it was there. They eventually built a railway line and completed it. Then they were sent back to, a lot of them were sent back to Singapore and were sent on board ship to Japan. I happened to be on a ship called the Kamakura Maru, and we landed in Nagasaki in the middle of winter, clothed in our shorts and shirts, sleeves, and what the remainder of the uniforms we still had. And we were sent from Nagasaki by rail up to Kobe. In Kobe, we were working for the Kawasaki Heavy Industries, building tanker carriers, cargo vessels, any sorts of ships they could repair or build, we were building them. Eventually we were bombed out of the shipyard and we were sent to work in coal mines. These coal mines had been abandoned for many years, but because of their desperate situation and position that they must have fuel, they opened up these coal mines with prisoner of war labour and women, and we got the very low quality but usable coal. It was whilst we were in the shipyard that the first atomic bomb was dropped, much to the surprise of the Japanese. They realised that they were vulnerable and that they were within easy reach of the American bombers. After the first atomic bomb was dropped, we were warned that the Americans were using what they called a heat bomb. And we were advised that there were air raid signals to take refuge in the slit trenches and cover ourselves over with blankets because of the radiation or the heat that was generated by these bombs. We later learnt, of course, that it was atomic bombs, and but we were out of touch of the world. And they dropped the second bomb at Hiroshima, which was getting closer to our camp, and we saw the mushroom extend up into the sky, And a few days later, we were sent there to clean up the bodies. We just didn't go. The bodies were put into slit trenches, taken out of large pools that had been erected to supplement the firefighting equipment, and they were just thrown in these slit trenches and just filled in. Nobody knew how many was there, nobody knew who they were or what they were. The result of the atomic bombs was absolutely, had to be seen to be believed, because of the extent of the damage that it caused. There was a few concrete buildings standing, but no floors, no windows, just the concrete and cement just the foundation that was there left there of the buildings, the railway lines, the tram lines, the overhead gear, that was all melted, bridges blown up, and the place was absolutely just completely flattened. And it was, although we were warned that the radiation would have a great deal of influence on our future health, they sent us in nevertheless to assist in the cleaning up and getting the place back to something like normal.
How many Australians were there in Hiroshima?
Well, there were various camps in Hiroshima and Kobe and Nagasaki. The exact number of Australians, wouldn't have a clue, but they were. Our camp was made up of British, Indians, Scots. They were from all sorts of regiments and units. So I don't really know, but in our camp there was about 100 Australians. There was about 400 in the camp altogether. But there was a lot of British, Dutch, quite a number of Dutch, and even a few Indian soldiers, and Scots regiments and British regiments, Navy, Air Force. So it was all the camps were pretty mixed up in their numbers and the nationality that they came from. After the second atomic bomb was dropped at Hiroshima, we were confined strictly to barracks. We weren't sent out on work parties until on the 15th they announced over the telecom communication system that the war had finished and that we were to remain in our camp until such time as arrangements had been made for us to be sent back to our country, our native land. A lot of the Japanese guards cleared out and left us to it. Some that stayed there, and, but we had their rifles and bayonets. We organised parties to go out and raid warehouses to obtain food, clothing, what have you. And after 5 or 6 days, the Americans came over in their bomber planes and started to drop supplies such as food, medicine, clothing, and things like that. In the first few drops, they were disastrous because the ropes holding the goods to attach to the parachute were too heavy, and the load just broke away and just smashed to the ground, and medicines and food and clothing were all mixed up and just absolutely ruined and wasted. Later on, they got down to a fine art and were dropping bottles of beer even to us in, and they were landing safely to be consumed very quickly. It was about, we wandered around to, everybody was anxious to get home, some more anxious than others, and they found out where there was camps, American camps, had established camps for their planes, and they organised ships to pick up troops and disinfect them and take all the way there. Lousy old clothing so that they wouldn't spread disease any further, and the by ship and by plane they flew out as quickly as they could, troops to American camps on Guam, Wake, Manila, Okinawa, where it was a staging camp for all the troops till they sorted themselves out, fattened themselves up a bit, and were organised into either aircraft or ships to take them home to Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, wherever they came from. I came from Okinawa to Darwin and flew from Darwin down to Adelaide and from Adelaide to Melbourne and was put into Heidelberg Repat Hospital for all sorts of tests to see, and the more seriously ill were kept in the hospital until such time as they were able to go home and try and get back to normal again.